Hello and welcome to the Stronach 5 podcast for Friday, October 16th. I'm your host, Peter Thomas Fornatel, back with you, coming to you from the Little House on the East Side proper, not in the degenerate flop house today. There's a long story there. I think I began to complain about it on one of the shows last week. I won't bore listeners with that again, but I'm in the main house. I'm not at the kitchen table. I'm upstairs in the little office. I've basically kicked Susan out of her office for the day, and I'm camped out in here to record this show for you. And joining me today, very happy to have back on the Stronach 5 show, guy you're going to be hearing plenty from in our coverage about the Breeders' Cup coming up over the next few weeks. He is horse player Matt Vagvolgi. Matt, how are you today?
Doing great, Pete. How are you?
Things are good. Things are good. Happy to be looking at races. We got a busy weekend of action. It's kind of funny now because even though obviously super interested in a lot of what's going on this weekend, including the Stronach 5 bet, you can't help but have the attention wander to the Breeders' Cup in just a few weeks' time. So I'll be working along parallel lines, handicapping and betting races that are happening now, but already starting to think about that stuff. How about you? When does your Breeders' Cup preparation begin in earnest?
It starts pretty early. I mean, I would say once I hit October, that's when my brain starts to gravitate towards the Breeders' Cup. I usually, again, I'm not going to dismiss opportunities out there, especially bets like this. I think the pick four that the Stronach Group's doing, as well as the Golden Hour Double, I think bets like that, I'll keep my eyes on. But I really start to spend a lot of time, you know, getting my thoughts together for the Breeders' Cup. Have a really good idea, or at least have a base idea of who's going to be running where. And, you know, that's when I start to do a lot of the trove of data, so to speak. Although having a little hiccup with Stats Race Lens right now, but hopefully that gets fixed soon. But yeah, I would say it starts early October and it starts to build, and I start to really have my thoughts planned out well in advance before the Breeders' Cup hits the ground running.
Few notes to pick up on there. Glad you mentioned the Golden Hour stuff. I think I'm going to do a special show again for this Saturday's Golden Hour pick four. Not sure who's going to be joining me for that one, but it will be somebody that listeners are going to want to hear from. I will, I'll insist upon that. Like the Stronach bet, you're dealing with player-friendly situations. While we're talking about the Stronach bet, I should also point out that there are free past performances available. If you go to drf.com/ITM and use the promo code MONEY, you can get free PPs for this week's Stronach 5, which is pretty cool. And then the last thing, a little early to talk about as we haven't finalized all the details, but it does sound, Matt, like you're going to be part of our team preparing some for our first little experiment into doing some premium content stuff. Don't worry. Everything that we've always done in the past for free is going to be for free. We're going to have Breeders' Cup Monster Pods. We're going to have the Pro Player Roundtable. But we are going to have some stuff behind a curtain, if you will, for folks to pay a little bit extra and access a bunch of articles that will essentially amount to a little ebook about this year's Breeders' Cup. And it sounds, Matt, like you're interested in contributing some stuff to that. Have you thought much about that?
Of course. Yeah, I know. I think that the angle that I look at it, I think will be a compliment to a lot of handicapping stuff that you do, and maybe getting you to think a little bit different about some races, about some horses. And, you know, again, whether it's statistic based, whether it's your eyes, whether it's your traditional handicapping through the PPs, listening to folks that you like to listen to, it becomes more of a portfolio, right? It's not just one side or the other that helps you build your opinions. And, you know, I think that's the ultimate design of, you know, of what we talked about. So I think, I'm really excited to offer up my opinions and offer up how I go about handicapping the races.
More on that very soon, probably as soon as next week. Now, your approach with stats is a little bit different than mine. I think they're a little bit more fundamental to what you do. But for me, generally, when it comes to looking at stats, and this could have to do with trainer statistics, or it could have to do with running style stats or post positions, whatever the stat is, the main ways I like to use them are long shots to include and favorites to, if not fully be against, at least treat with a little bit of trepidation. And when a stat can put me, there's a favorite I was leaning against, a stat can put me off that horse completely. And it can also take a horse I was kind of interested in and make it one. Hey, I'm going to key this one. Is that a similar way that you use stats, or like I was speculating, are they a bit more fundamental to your process?
No, I think that's spot on. And I think that sometimes the misperception of statistics in general is that, you blindly follow a stat, you're going to find yourself losing, a lot. I agree with that. I do like the statistical side of things. It just helps me be more efficient in terms of how I'm handicapping and how I'm playing. And just as you said, does it get me on a horse more, right, with some additional, support on the number side, or does it make me question a favorite a bit more? So I think, that those are areas that certainly help. But, I also think too, to blindly follow a stat, again, is just, it's not going to do you any good. And there's times where stats will pop up that have been very, very profitable for me. Then I'll handicap the race and I'll just disagree completely. And to give an example, Bill Mott's figures going long on the turf at Saratoga were abysmal. There was a horse he had running long I couldn't lose. And guess what? He won by five. So I just completely dismissed the stat. So you've got to take it from all angles. I just think this, if you're looking at one in a silo, I think you'll struggle. If you start to encompass it all and just make it more of a part of the process and not the total process, I think that's where it helps. But to blindly follow everything, like I say, nothing always works. So, it's just another way to add some more, more of a vision to the race and where you want to go in terms of constructing tickets or what horses you want to play.
A bit more nuance that can lead to pricing things more accurately that will necessarily lead to value as you're talking it through. Those were the kind of words that were popping into my head.
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes it's pace analysis. Sometimes it's a particular trainer. Like there's a stat that I'll briefly go over in one of the races today. But just whether it's connections, whether it's changing surfaces, first time starter, whatever the case may be. There's times where there was a run. I had a pace stat at Gulfstream that, just hitting on a regular basis. But Maloney talks about in your book, Pete, is, you have to also have the understanding and be self-aware when those particular angles start to run their course. You can't just have that blind stubbornness to say, nope, it's worked before, I'm going to continue to do it. You got to know when to get off of it. So, there was a period of time where I couldn't lose. And then I just saw it where it just wasn't really working. I felt, moisture in the track with rain for several days just really changed things a bit, and I got off it. So you just have to understand when things are working to play them, and when you start to notice it start to slide a bit, then I think that you start to move away.
This is down the rabbit hole, but are you referring to the stat about wet track at Keeneland and the how well closers had done for a time under those conditions, sort of counterintuitively, or was this a different stat entirely?
That's what I'm referring to. And again, it's more of the general idea of just having that, like saying, okay, the way closers with this particular type of track, the way they perform at Keeneland, this was, with on the turf at Gulfstream. It's just understanding when those start to change a bit and you start to see some more races where it becomes run a little bit more evenly or it changes completely. I think you just need to be self-aware and you can't just blindly follow it. Like on stats race lines, if it shows up green, doesn't mean it's always going to work, right? But green means good, right? It's a positive angle on a success score and also on an ROI standpoint. To me, it'll guide me in that direction. I'll certainly take a look. There's some angles that, I think that are good enough, or I have them texted to me once they hit the PPs. So, there's certain angles like that, but I'm always going to go through my everyday regular process to make sure, does the angle fit today with the group, with the competition, with the pace scenario? You encompass everything. And that's where I think you ultimately come up to your final decision.
So I think in the first order, what I said, I was right and I was wrong. I was wrong in that you are using the stats ultimately in a very similar way to what I am. I think where I was right is we do it kind of backwards, whereas I'm all fundamentals first. And then if an angle occurs to me, I'll go look for it. Whereas through the way that stats race lens works, you might be handicapping a race because of the angle. I think it's very shrewd, actually, and something I wish I did a little bit more of as I hear you talk about it. But Matt, let's take this opportunity to segue to this week's Stronach 5. We start off with leg A. It's race 8 from Gulfstream Park. It is carded for the turf. Now, there's some weather in South Florida. We'll have to see. I did this one both ways. It's carded 7.5 furlongs for the turf, maidens 12.5. I'll let you kick this one off. And let's be optimists. Let's start off by talking about this race as if it's going to be on the turf.
Hopefully it is on the turf. Now, I could be wrong. I've been kind of half paying attention since Gulfstream Park West has jumped into the lineup. Have they been on the turf yet? Or have they been off pretty much every day? I'm not sure if they've been on the turf yet.
Oh, is that right? I had assumed they had. I will be honest. I've played it. I've played some early card Gulfstream races when I've been on TV, but the days have been rainy, so they would have been off anyway on those. I was just assuming there were some sunny days in South Florida.
Yeah, no, hopefully there have been, and hopefully it's nice and sunny on Friday so we can stay on the turf. You know, I think you can go a lot of different directions here. I mean, you look on paper, and as always, Pete, I'll need some help on names, but you know, I think, you know, the one, is it Guaco, right? Is that how you say it?
Guaco, yeah, Guaco. I'm confident in that one.
You know, I think on paper, yes, this horse is certainly one to beat. You know, has run against probably the best out of this group. I don't know how reliable this horse is. You know, anytime I look and see beaten as a favorite three times in a row, two times on dirt, once on turf, you start to question whether how hard you want to lean on this horse. So again, you know, a horse I think on paper can certainly be a factor, but you know, there are some, you know, to look at elsewhere. You know, I think you know, the number nine Bomocene, right? I just, you know, when looking at this horse, second time going to be on the turf, hopefully second time on the turf. You have to go back a ways, you know, to last year running at Delaware. But, you know, I thought that was a decent effort against much better than what this horse is going to face today. I like this, you know, second off of a long layoff. Showed a bit of speed on the dirt the last time and faded a bit in the lane, but, you know, ran pretty evenly. But I think that's a horse that's somewhat interesting, I think, getting on the turf for a second time. And I just think, you know, in general, the six and the 10 as first time starters, the six fake ID and the 10 Derby code for Maker, some nice numbers for Maker, as, you know, specifically at Gulfstream Park West. So I think, you know, those are some to include there. But, you know, again, I'm going to use the one Guaco, but I'm also going to include the nine as well as the 11 too.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that was my top pick on turf. And I was going to say, you and I usually, we have fairly similar opinions. If you were fully against this one, I was going to wonder why, just because when you go back to those turf figures from the spring and then facing the two washed off situations. But I mean, if this horse has improved at all since the spring, almost a standout to me on turf, I'd say.
Yeah, in terms of pass figure, yeah, exactly. And I think it's more of my brain wandering, trying to find somebody different, just where I think the money's going to go. But you're absolutely right. You look back at this horse getting back to exactly, where this gelding wants to run, right? Wants to run on the turf. And like you said, I think the figures are superior to what's in this field. Especially if Guaco takes a ton of money, he's going to push this price up a little bit. I would love to get that 5-1 on the turf here, but for me, I'm not sold 100%. I understand the last two races were on dirt, one on a sloppy track, did basically no running. But you know, again, those turf figures are nice, and it's third off a layoff, getting back to the appropriate surface. So definitely a big player. Also on a pace perspective too, I think sits right behind the nine. They may go at each other a little bit, but I think lays off the nine and sits a nice spot. But for me, the top plays for me, I'm going to look at is the 1-11-9. And then I would like to include the 6 and 10, the two first, as bees in there as well.
I don't mind spreading in this spot at all, and your short list is extremely similar to mine. Guaco, I thought, an obvious type of horse, but like you said, can't really be trusted. I couldn't decide about the last race, but I kept wanting to say, it was a perfect trip and the horse didn't really finish. Probably wise to include as a backup if possible. And the big switch for me is on dirt. I'm not nearly as interested in the 11, who I'm going to call Key. It could be Kai, I suppose. That horse I love on turf, don't really like on dirt. And Bomocene, who I think you made a good case for why the horse makes some degree of sense on turf, but I think probably moves up for me a little bit on dirt. And then I'm certainly with you on Derby Code, just interesting on either surface. And there was a note I found about this dam having run big on debut So one that I wanted to include as well. So we're very much on the same page in that first race. As for tickets today, I believe, Matt, I conned you into doing what you did the last time you were on the show, which is rather than do our ABC thing in real time, after scratches come out, after we know which surface this race is going to be on, to have you go back and you know, I can help you with this too, between recordings tomorrow. But once we have scratches, constructing some tickets, when we have a little bit more knowledge, are you still up for that challenge?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that just becomes more in line with what I think the appropriate process is, right? To take a look to see what, obviously what weather has coming in, and then also to looking at scratches and any kind of change to pace scenario. I think that's, to me, that's my process, right? Everybody has a different process, but I love to handicap and get my idea set before, and then do the ticket construction afterwards once I have a clear picture. So yeah, no, I'm more than happy to do it, to put those together and put them up on the site.
I appreciate that very much, as will the listeners. Let's move on to leg B of the Stronach 5, race 7 from Laurel Park. I should have given the off time of the race from Gulfstream. That one is scheduled for 3:58, and then leg B comes along at 4:18 scheduled post time, once again at Laurel. This is their race 7, 6 furlongs, optional claimers. We're going 6 furlongs on the dirt, and it's a good thing because there's some weather in the area potentially, it looks like, but at least we don't have to worry about it. I'll give you my I'll start this one off, and this was a race where I was kind of it was inclined to be a little bit spready too, and I'm curious what you think about the ones I came up with. Noble Way off that big improve last time, and what I thought was an impressive looking mid-race move with natural speed. This was a horse I wanted on tickets. A fuzzier one, at least in morning line terms, that I thought was maybe worth including, the 8 DC Fireman. Looked like a nice workout on display. Possible pace edge when looking at Timeform US. And this horse has recent form that's super dirty. But if you go back to that February race and build off that, factoring in a potential pace advantage, I think this one might have a shot at a price. And then an angle I typically like when betting Laurel, trying to find horses that ended up on rails that maybe weren't good and try to bet them back the next time. Number 5, 4:55 Rocket, I thought looked a little bit interesting off the last couple of rail runs, and another who looked like might be forward as this race plays out, race number 7 at Laurel on Friday. How did you see it?
We're going to be pretty boring here, Pete, but you mentioned the three horses that I really like in this race, maybe in a little bit different order, but my top pick is actually the 8, DC Fireman. And I agree. Just my pace figures agree with Timeforms as well. I think this horse not only gets the lead, but gets it pretty naturally and easy. And you know, if you look, like you mentioned, you look back at the race in March, the race in February, you know, this horse was pressed pretty hard throughout early fractions and hung on to win and faded a bit in fourth in that March race. But if you go back to even earlier in January, a similar race, similar setup, you know, it gets a little bit better today, but, you know, left this horse off the hook completely on the front end and just walked the entire way. So I think you see more of a setup like that, where I think the 8 might get away and then you'll start to see jocks getting busy behind them. And then, you know, that'll be the end of it. So I'm hoping for an easy pace setup for DC Fireman. It's actually my top play. So I'm definitely going to use this horse as an A. I agree with you in regards to, the 4 Noble Way. I mean, this, you can't really knock much of anything that this horse has done. It's shown up in run every day, you know, wasn't bet first out, came back, was bet 1 by a neck, and then just trounced him in that starter allowance by 5 1/4. Now the issue here, long layoff, right? You know, in the COVID days, you're not really sure exactly, you know, what that means, but you know, it's been 280 days away, coming back against a field that, you know, Noble Way should handle pretty easily, and won pretty nicely in the mud too. So if there's moisture in the track, I'm going to move this horse up even more. But I think either way, definitely a must use for Noble Way, and we'll certainly take money. But the 4, the 8, and then I had as a B, 7 on the rocks as well. I think this will be a horse on a pace standpoint that let's say Noble Way is really feeling it off the bench and presses DC Fireman on the front end. I think the five is the 5-7 on the rocks is the beneficiary of that situation. So I think it's in a perfect trip in that case. But I decided to move that horse to a B. I just think that I like on a pace advantage DC Fireman, but I also think the 4 Noble Way, whether it's a fast track or some moisture in the track, is going to be a very, very tough horse to beat.
The other one I had mentioned was I definitely like those three. I have no problem making DC Fireman sort of the top pick. I do worry with a horse with speed that we both come up with, but the price may be lower than we're thinking it might be. But the other I definitely wanted to at least get your take on, if not have in there at least as a backup, is the 5 with that this 450 Rocket coming off what I thought might have been compromised by the way the racetrack was playing. Trips. Did you reckon anything? I said 5. It's the number six.
The 6, right? Yeah,
the 6. 455 Rocket was the other number that I wanted to talk about.
I mean, there's. I just have a lot of question marks. I think in terms of the quality of fields that this horse has been running against, and I just feel it's that Jekyll and Hyde kind of horse. Like, which horse is going to show up? I know in the August race, it said steadied early. I don't know. I mean, watch it, you know, give your thoughts on that. You know, something that you and JK talk about a lot of closing into the blue, you know, and looking at the time form figures, you know, that's in spades in that race back in July off that claiming win. So, I think a horse to include, I would say for me would be a B type of horse. But I'm just not exactly sure which one's going to show up. I feel strongly on a pace scenario with the 8, but I also think that the 4, no matter what the track shows up, is going to be tough to beat too. So I wouldn't mind throwing the 6 in as a B.
Yeah, I wouldn't hate that. I wasn't too worried about that trip in terms of the break. I was more concerned about the fact that the horse ended up on the rail to me and just spinning wheels. And then the form of that race for the level has worked out okay since. So anyway, you're absolutely right. Not a press. But an include if it's possible. We stay at Laurel for the next race in this Stronach 5 sequence. And I'll get you all the details in 1 second here as soon as the page loads. We've got $10,000 maiden fillies. These are 3-year-olds and up, and they're going 1 mile. I'll let you kick this one off.
You know, again, a similar situation to the Gulfstream race. You know, your eyes draw to, you know, for me anyway, the 6 Thunder in the Valley. You know, I think, again, on paper, horse to beat has run against much better, been very competitive against those horses, finishing in the money the last 3. The problem with those last 3 or 2 out of those last 3, you've got, you know, off odds at 5-2 and then off at 1-5, losing it by 5 lengths. That's where I pull the e-brake a little bit and I say, okay, where else can I find some value? So, this is a type of horse that, to be honest with you, I'm going to decide whether or not I want to use protectively, given other races, or if it's a horse I want to toss completely and try to beat. So I would say that's one I'm not, I would say what I like to call an active crime scene handicapping. I'm not exactly sure at this point how I want to use this horse, but definitely, again, you can't argue that this horse has been competitive. I just, you know, that last race is certainly a little bit of a little bit of concern. And again, you know, stretching out here to a mile, again, I think that that might add a little bit to it as well. A couple of horses, one horse I really like, you're looking at the 3, Not My Money, I thought was interesting. Again, if moisture gets into the track, I'm going to move this up even more. You know, yeah, did fail as a favorite last time, on the dirt, you know, does cut back to the mile, which I think is the preferred surface here. And I think just on a pace perspective, I think sits behind, the 6 and the 8. Now, again, I'm in agreement with time forms pace, projection. And I think sits a good spot. I think the pace will be a little bit faster, than what's projected here, but you know, I think has decent form both on a fast track and on the slop. So, I mean, I'm hoping for the 6-1 here, but I think Not My Money is going to have a big say in the result in this race. And another horse that I wanted to include as well, just again, kind of fresh face, doing something different against what I feel to be a little bit of a suspect field is the 7 Podunk. First time out on the turf. I get it. didn't do a step of running, but you know what? Changing surface, you know, has gone the mile at least, has gotten to the track. You know, trying him on dirt here, you know, maybe something wakes this horse up a bit, but I think has the talent. And I think looking at work patterns, I think is ready to run here. So I'm interested to see this horse on the dirt. But the three was a big play for me, but this was a confusing race for me, Pete. So I'm curious if you had any additional ideas beyond that.
No, I mean, I think you've pointed to the logical alternatives. I would say, though, that Thunder in the Valley probably should be used defensively. I know it's gross, the getting beat at 1-5, but just looking at how this maps out pace-wise, should get a really good trip in here, too. And I think you're on it exactly right. I mean, I think from the common races, Thunder in the Valley looks like the one, and I would prefer to the likes of my Super Sally or whatever. But the idea of trying to reach out and get some strangers too, and not wholly rely on this one who's been turned over as a favorite so many times. Well, it's not the so many times, it's the twice, but it's really the 1-5 is just, it's tough to stomach. But I could see this horse just coming back and being better than these. So it would be my inclination to use defensively, just because I think it's a really it's a dire looking group. Yeah,
I agree, Pete. And this is not for me anyway. It's not, I jump off a horse like this that lost at 1-5, meaning this horse can't win, toss. That's not the case. You know, listen,
this maybe is a weaker group. This is, I went back and looked at that race, and this is a weaker group.
No question about it. I agree with that. And also I think in terms of being on the lead, again, last race I thought sat a perfect trip right behind the speed. And I thought, just like, when are you going to press the button and go buy this horse and just cruise home? And it never happened. And that lead just widened and widened in the stretch. Listen, maybe Thunder in the Valley just ran into a buzzsaw and just wasn't her day. Right. So certainly a horse I'm not going to toss completely. I'll have on some tickets, like I mentioned before, but there are some where I may try to beat this horse and try to get some value out of the pool with some ticket construction. So I'm not sold to single this horse. I'll certainly use in some cases, but I'm definitely going to try to beat this horse in some tickets.
We agree completely. Another thing, I'm happy to see a jockey change on this horse, because I don't know that it really mattered, but she did end up down on the rail last time, not where, you know, I typically want to be at Laurel. Didn't have a very good trip three races back. Obviously, that number two back buries the field. So I do feel like the flip could be script for the script could be flipped for this one. But I love your idea. We agree completely with your approach on this one. So this is a good sign. I remember, you know, in the past when we've had this much agreement on pick bets we've worked on together in the show, good things have happened. Let's move this conversation out west for leg D. 5:08 Eastern. It's race 3 from Santa Anita. 5.5 on the turf. We've got state bred maiden special weights. We're up in class a little bit here. And there are some early scratches in the program, including the number 1 Crossword Will Not Go. And I think we both think this might set it up for one runner in particular. I'll let you lead off.
Yeah, this was a race where I'm gonna get skinny here, and I think a top A for me is gonna be Lil Nas the 4, Flavian Pratt aboard, getting Peter in. There's just a lot to like about this horse in this particular race. Again, I know you've got some firsters that certainly could show up, but you know, there's three basic things I look for a first time starter. I know it's gonna sound basic and intuitive, but this is what I look for: a horse that can get to the gate, get in the gate, and get out of the gate, right? So I want to see that the horse can get there, can be relaxed, get into the gate, and also show some speed. So I love the speed and fade angle with a first-time starter. If that's exactly what happened with this horse at Del Mar, running on the dirt. Then you combine that as well with how well Peter Urton does with second-time starters switching surface, going from dirt to turf. Does very well at Santa Anita. You're also getting Flavian Pratt. Now, just like I had some conversations about Rispoli, who I absolutely love. I think he's a phenomenal jockey, one of the best turf jocks out in the West Coast. I think that Flavian Pratt, when it comes to this 5 and a hook sprint at Santa Anita, this is who you want, right? Sitting off, just off the pace, stalking, and just and firing through the lane. That's, you want Pratt in this situation. I think sprinting on this turf course is a great compliment to all the things I like about the horse. I like about the trainer move. So there's just a lot of boxes that check for me. So Lil Nas for me is going to be a pretty big A, and certainly we'll look to single this horse on some tickets as well. I did mention Rispoli, so I certainly want to look at the seven. Similar situation again, second time starter getting over to the turf. I'm sorry, that's by Moonlight. I'm looking at that's Centeno is on this horse, but I like this horse too. You know, again, you know, showed some involvement in the race on the dirt. You know, maybe moving to the turf will certainly we'll move this horse up a bit. So another horse that I certainly wanted to look at. One firster I thought as a fuzzy that I would play around with is looking at the two, Fleet Roy. Some decent numbers with 2-year-olds for Hector, especially at Santa Anita. Just digging into some of those numbers. Again, I think might be a little overmatched for this field, but also might get completely left alone on the tote board. Usually has these horses ready to roll. I think the work patterns are what I like in terms of building fitness, but also showing some speed. So things that I like to show me that, hey, this horse, you know, this horse might be ready to run first out. So that was a fuzzy that I wanted to include there as well. So again, I think the four for me is a big play. And then a little bit of the seven and the firster on the two, Fleet Roy.
I'm with you. I mean, for me, I was absolutely good with the lone A on Lil Nas. You made the case. I don't need to make it again. I'll just point out that the horse has worked forwardly since as well. I'm very good. I love the idea of having backups in a 2-year-old race, but I'd be okay putting 80% of our play down this old town road with Lil Nas. This is what happens when you have a 7-year-old. You start making Lil Nas jokes, but I'm good with it, and I think we should move on to our pay leg. Leg E, 525. It's race 3 from Golden Gate. And I'll ask you the question, Matt, how are we going to get paid?
Golden Gate has been a little bit of a love-hate relationship, I'll be honest with you. We are currently back together, considering I did hit that golden hour double last week that paid like $1,200 for $5. So
very nice.
That was one of those graded all type situations that I did play into. But again, you know, I think it was like $80 I put into it, and $1,200 coming back. Certainly not going to complain there. But again, that's just another example of the higher minimums in a pool like that, even in a double, can certainly produce some outsized pay. I get it. There's a 30-1 that wound up winning, but you know, again, I still think it's certainly a bet to look at because of that. And again, falls into what we're talking about today of the Stronach 5 with the way that it's structured in terms of its minimum and the takeout. But you know, yeah, Golden Gate's been kind of up and down for me. You know, I think that, you know, when you look at this, this is another difficult race, you know, to be honest with you. I mean, I think there's a couple that you can lean a bit on, you know, when looking at, I'll start with the two, homegrown, for, you know, Evan Roman aboard, you know, third time out, you know, stretching out a bit, you know, sprinted the last two going six, flashed some early speed, against tougher. So certainly dropping down to the, you know, 12,000 maiden claiming here. You know, again, I just think his run against better the last two races, I think we'll get the lead pretty easily. And I say it a lot, you know, naturally get the lead, meaning not necessary to hustle out of the gate like last time. You know, I don't think you're going to see any duels to start early on. I think Evan can get a controlling pace here, and you know, I think it's going to be very difficult to beat, especially again, when I see at Golden Gate, if you can get the lead and left alone, you become very difficult to run down in the lane. When you're pressed early, that's, you know, again, you're going to start to see some horses run off the pace on the synthetic there. But, you know, I think Homegrown is going to be a short price. I do think that certainly is the horse to beat. Another horse that I did like, again, I'm not going to be the brilliant one here, but, you know, the five, yep. Autism Savant, I think is, yeah. I just, again, I just, I, I, love a horse that can just show me some speed. Show me that you're alert in the gate first time out. You're not looking around, breaking out, or, you know, it's just you're ready for business. And listen, the horse faded down the lane, but that's okay. I don't mind that. And I actually don't mind this horse stretching out either. I think that, again, very similar to the two homegrown, I thought that Autism Savant here, the five, was pressed a little hard out of the gate. I thought Evan Ramon here rode this horse pretty hard to try to get the lead. And I think that paid its, that they had to pay the debt late in the lane. So I think more of a relaxed approach. I think let the two go, sit behind this horse and just trying to harness some of that speed and let it loose in the lane. So I think those are the real two that I like in this race. I consider the three and the four a bit, but I mean, I think that's the next level down for me. I'd like to go with the 2.5 in this last leg.
It seems obvious to me based on the speed, based on the way they were bet. That's also my case on Autism Savant. It is interesting. You wonder, people can read too much into jockey bookings and jockey musical chairs, but it does stand to reason that Roman may have picked the 2 over the 5. But in breeding terms, this horse could handle the stretch out. And just looking at pace figures, I would agree. I don't see them hooking up in a duel. I would imagine the 2's going to go and the 5's going to sit. I could probably do without the 3. It is tough. I mean, the drop from maiden special weight is so significant, but just seeing the 43-1 there, sometimes at this level, maybe to a fault, I'm looking at how bet horses have been in previous starts as some potential signal. And I'm liking it more when I can come up with some, if I can come up with a story as to why the horse wasn't bet. I mean, granted, why not Tony? Probably just over the head. But I definitely see 2 terms as one who at least finished up his race last time. I don't know. I mean, doesn't look like a particular stretch out breeding to me. I'd be fine, actually, probably just going 2.5. But obviously, if you find some longer shots, you might want to throw in there. I certainly wouldn't say no. One goofy one. I'll just mention a goofy one. I don't necessarily even need on the tickets, but this might be the kind of thing if we're sitting here 4 for 4 and this horse is the morning line price or above. The Shyster is a little tiny bit interesting to me, just on one that had a trip first out when bet, comes back doing something different. Just the kind of angle that can lead you to cap type horses in contests and things like that. But I think for our purposes, I'm very happy with the 2.5 and then maybe try to sneak the Shyster in there as a backup or one just to keep on side in the wind pool if we come to this race alive. Any other thoughts, Matt, for you on this race or this week's Stronach 5?
Yeah, I think interesting point on the 7 and what I have as one of my notes here is basically first time starter is what I have down here. And I think that's it's one of those interesting scenarios where the horse has to go through everything to get to the track, get ready, get saddled, go to the track. And just when it says takes up sharply at the start, I think that's an understatement. You know, when I watch this, I just feel like this horse never had a chance to run. And that's why you're seeing a very even kind of hanging out there type of run throughout the race. So I don't know if this horse is good enough, to be honest with you. But again, there's just a lot of unknowns here. So that's a horse certainly you may want to think about throwing in there. But you know, I think the 2 and the 5 are the separators in this field here. I think that's an interesting point to bring up on the 7, because that's something that I had as a question mark just looking at that and watching that race. I thought that might be an interesting one that might get left off the board. And again, you know, Evan Roman rode this horse the last time too. So Seems to be every horse that he's jumping off of, but I've asked multiple jockeys that, and they always laugh when I ask that question. So
do they ever give a serious answer? I think it all depends is the answer. So that's probably why they laugh.
I've had a few say, listen, it's a business, you know, and they kind of leave it at that. So listen, there's times where you ride certain horses for certain reasons. You know, sometimes we do things in our life for certain reasons, but not to say that when you become, you know, a leading jock in the colony, obviously, you know, you want to get paid and put yourself in the best opportunity possible. So, and a lot of different ways to look at that. Personally, I don't fall in love with that particular idea. So especially in this race where it seems like seems like Evan's jumping off every horse in this race. So
right.
He's got to land somewhere.
At a point, and very often it's, you know, in the big picture of, you know, in the big picture of life, one could just be a more important client than another, the trainer. And it might not have to do with the specifics of the horse, or it could be the horse was meant for a certain spot and you gave the call and you couldn't get out of it. And you and your agent are acting with integrity and sticking with your call, and your opinion about which one's better doesn't even come into play. You don't want to go crazy with that stuff. But at the same time, it is a data point, and it has put me onto winners at points, or at least putting me on includes, as the case may be. All right, we're not going to do tickets here. Matt is going to kindly do that for us after scratches. We'll see what happens with that first race at Gulfstream in terms of on the turf, off the turf. But after talking to you about this, I'm pumped, man. We came up with a lot of the same stuff, and good things tend to happen when that happens. So fingers crossed. We'll hear back from you tomorrow. Folks listening, if you want to see the tickets, I'll probably tweet them. You can also go over to inthemoneypodcast.com and check out this Stronach 5 for October 16th show page. Matt, thank you so much.
Thanks, Pete. Appreciate being here. And yeah, let's cash some tickets again.
That's going to do it for this edition of the Stronach 5 podcast. We'll thank Matt one more time. We'll thank our friends at the Stronach Group, especially Steve Cook, who's been such a great pleasure to deal with. This show's been a production of In the Money Media. Our business manager is Drew Cotney. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kinchin. I'm Peter Thomas Fornital. May you win all your Stronach 5 photos.